He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
This is the School of Motion podcast. Come for the MoGraph, stay for the puns.
And so it had never dawned on me that, like, maybe one day, like, I can own my own studio. It was always like, maybe one day I could work for one of these guys. And it was just because I'd never seen anybody in the position of owning their own studio. I'd never seen, like, a Black curly-headed woman owning their own animation studio. And it's so rare.
Motioneers, I am so excited today to introduce you to Imoni LaRussa, an artist who, as soon as I was introduced to her work, knew that she needed to be on this podcast, because you don't run into that many people in motion design that have this much of a command of such a wide variety of styles this early in their career. And what I found out about Imoni was that not only is she an amazing artist, but she really wants to push the industry forward and help change it for the better, because we still have a lot of work to do in our industry. Now, before we dive in to find out more about what makes Imoni tick, let's take a listen to one of our amazing alumni.
My name's Natalie Wood, and I live in Manchester, England. I've taken the Character Animation Bootcamp and the Cinema 4D Basecamp. My job requires me to do a lot of character animation, so the course I took was ideal for my career. When I did the Cinema 4D Basecamp, I literally went from only being able to open Cinema 4D to being able to model, light, and animate within a couple of months. And even after just the first lesson, I was able to model a room and put a mini version of myself in it. The whole course was so enjoyable that I didn't mind spending my evenings after work locked away in my home office working on the course. I'd recommend Character Animation Bootcamp and Cinema 4D Basecamp to anyone who wants to learn how to animate a character and bring them to life, or to anyone who just wants to get started working in the third dimension. My name is Natalie Wood, and I'm a School of Motion graduate.
All right, Imoni, I have been wanting to have this conversation for a while, because at School of Motion, your work got sent over to me a while ago, and I honestly haven't seen anybody who has the range of styles that you cover. But before we go any further, I have to ask you one question.
Yes.
Are you a fellow AI graduate?
Sadly, yes.
I did the same thing, and I don't know about you, but I had a very interesting time there. Yeah, I wonder if you have any good stories about your time at AI.
I went there like ready to like conquer the world. I was like so excited. I had taken like some film classes in high school, and I really always wanted to like make music videos. And so I was like, yo, I want to be a cinematographer. I want to go to film school. And like AI seemed like the place that I wanted to go, because it was close to my hometown, Fresno, where my parents were living at the time. And so I was like 2 hours away. It's not LA. Let's do it. And so they're like, yeah, if you get like straight A's, you basically pay like half of the tuition by the time you leave. And I'm like, sick, like that's all I had to do. And like a quarter in, they were like, yo, so like the Pell Grant is like completely taken away from the school.
Oh.
Because they basically were reaching out to lower income kids and were trying to get as much federal aid as possible and like weren't really acting like a school. And so the government caught wind of that and took like all of the grants away. And so I was like, no worries. Like, it's still a good school, right? And like over time, I was just like, I'm learning a lot more from YouTube than I am in school. And so it was interesting. I definitely had times there that really shaped like who I am today. Obviously, I got to meet like some really cool people, but I also learned very quickly how being a very feminine woman of color in a male dominant industry was not like ever seen and wasn't really respected. And at first, like I was kind of like oblivious of that. Like I thought maybe people just didn't like me because I was like weird. But then I started like confronting people and just trying to figure out like, why don't you want me on your set? Like I am getting 120% in my like classes and my cinematography classes. I'm trying to be a cinematographer. And being a cinematographer, like you need to have a crew. Mm-hmm. And so when you don't have people who want to be on your set, it was just like, why is this going on? Like, I'm so nice to so many people, and I've never, like, I go out of my way to try to make people feel like they're being heard, and I'm definitely not getting that back. And so I like confronted somebody and I was like, why do you hate me so much? Like, I'm just trying my best to like be a hard worker. And he was like, I just think because you're a girl, you get favoritism. Ugh. And the reason why you're getting good grades is because the teachers like feel bad for you. And it wasn't that like I was the only person. Like, it couldn't possibly be that I work hard. Like, it couldn't possibly be that, like, I was spending all of my time to study cinematography, or that I was the only person who had an actual cinematography job in any of our classes. Like, it couldn't be that. Like, it had to be that I was too girly. Like, I got told that, like, the dress that I wore on set, which had like shorts on, like I was covered, like it wasn't inappropriate, was that it was too inappropriate and that I don't deserve the respect on set. But meanwhile, there's like dudes over here wearing shorts that are like shorter than my dress. And it was a really eye-opening thing. There was a lot of times where like there was one teacher there that told me that my graphics were mediocre. And that I should just focus on something else. And so what's actually interesting about that is years later, I ended up getting hired at CBS News in Sacramento. And he ended up getting hired there because AI shut down. And he worked at a job that was below me. And so I'm over here being a cinematographer and I'm like, sir, can you go get those lights for me, please? Like, it's really interesting.
The temptation must have been strong to return the favor.
Oh, man. The amount of pettiness that I wanted. But I didn't, because like those moments that I had, like those really low moments that I had of just like knowing that I was being discriminated just simply for the way that I looked, and not a reflection of my art and like my work ethic, it really just made me be like, yo, I'm just going to work 10 times harder. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to like show that like y'all want to judge me, but like, you guys don't have a good reason to. And I'm going to continue being a nice person because, like, you know, kill them with kindness. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's just really interesting how my AI experiences, like, turned out to, like, really build my character as a person and just, like, really, like, help me become the person that I am today. So, yeah, AI was definitely interesting.
Interesting, right? Interesting years. And cool. I mean, I have to give you 1,000 props just for confronting that. Like,
thank
it
you.
Seemed like very, like innocently and honestly just trying to find out what the problem is. I don't know if you feel this way, but I do feel like there are a lot of people like me, a lot of people that are white guys, middle age, bald, been in the industry for a while, that like to call the industry a meritocracy. And they like mm-hmm. to just say, like, you know what? It's animation, it's creative, no one's judged, everything's equal. It's just how good the work is.
Yeah.
And I think your example is a perfect kind of point that, like, from the start, the disadvantages and the systemic kind of examples of people trying to push people like you down from the beginning, not once you're in the industry and you've tried to work for a while and politics all comes to play, but from the beginning, there's this scary number out there that I can't quote the exact number, but the amount of women that are in the industry in terms of like in school, in programs versus within mm-hmm. the first 2 years, how many drop out at, you know, you get out of school, you have a degree, you have a demo reel, you have your first job. And within like the first 6 months to 2 years, the amount of women that leave because of these kinds of issues like you're talking about, it's not a meritocracy. And I love it, even your best example. If people listen to this, go to Imani's, if you go to her Twitter and you just look at your pinned tweet, the fact that you have all this beautiful, very different artwork that's really like, it's just an example of how far reaching your work is. But in it, you say, I am a part of the 2.8% of Black women in animation. The fact that even there, you're still confronting, you're pushing that out to let people know, like, look, this is a problem. Like, yeah. This is an issue, like you said, but with kindness, like just to like open people's eyes. I don't know the answers to this, but having that in front of people is at least the first step to let people know, like, it is not a meritocracy. It is not. There are other forces at play.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. It's definitely like one thing that I could kind of like relate it to. And a big reason why I feel like women, people of color, like are kind of scared to get into fields that are like dominated by one type of person. I remember like for the majority of my life, I always skateboarded everywhere. Mm-hmm. And like Like that was like my main source of transportation, like for like 5 years of my life. And being a girl on a skateboard, there's just so much more pressure for when, like if you fall, like everyone falls on a skateboard, like it's inevitable. And I had so much pressure on me that like, if I fell, then they would look at me and be like, oh, it's just a girl trying to skateboard. And it was like, I didn't realize it till later, like how many moments I had just like that in my career, where it's like, I am the only person that looks like this in this field. And it's like, there's so much pressure on me to succeed and to not fuck up. But there's definitely more pressure because it's just like, am I going to be held to this standard now? Oh yeah, I know this one Black girl that I worked with, she like messed up and she did this. And like, there's just so many eyes. And so like, there's definitely that pressure of like trying to be your best and not messing up. And it's like, it's impossible. Like you're going to mess up and you're going to do things that aren't right because you're learning. That's the whole point. And exactly. So being like growing up and like kind of learning that like motion graphics was like my heart and soul. It was because like no one wanted me on their set as a cinematographer. So it pushed me towards that. And like, I realized that like the amount of people who are in motion graphics are predominantly like white males. And so it had never dawned on me that like maybe one day like I can own my own studio. Mm-hmm. Like maybe one day like I could do this. It was always like maybe one day I could work for one of these guys. And it was just because I'd never seen anybody in the position of owning their own studio. I'd never seen like a Black curly-headed woman owning their own animation studio. And it's so rare. Right. The amount of studios that I do know are predominantly owned by white males. And so knowing that that existed, I was like, yo, like, I want to change this. Like, I just want to put it out there in the world and like the universe that like, I want this to happen. And so, yeah, I think one thing is I always say like, go out of your way to like help somebody, go out of your way to support somebody. But it's like, how do we know that like we're supposed to help and support people when we don't know that it exists? Like, I don't think people like are aware that this is like a very rare thing for women of color to be in animation. Like, and it's, I didn't even know at a point, like I was asked to work on a project for Black Women to Animate. And they were like, hey, can you bring on, like, we want to make sure that this project is just Black female animators. And I was like, yeah, no worries. Like, whenever I'm working on a project, I instantly go on like Instagram and I start just searching for like artists. That's usually how I'm able to find people for these gigs. And so I'm looking and it's days and it's days it's like weeks at this point. And I literally can only find one Black female animator. And she was booked. Right. So I couldn't even use her. But it was insane. Like, we ended up trying to figure out like another way to do it. And I'm just like, that is absolutely insane.
It's mind blowing.
Yeah. And it's just because how could I ever see myself work at a job that like I don't ever see anybody who look like me work there? You know? Like, it just seems impossible. So yeah, it's pretty interesting.
See, I think that's why there's always the question like, well, how do we solve this? And it's like, well, just help people get their first shot. And I think it actually, it goes back a lot earlier than that. Like, if you're saying, you know, in school, you're getting these kinds of pressures that a lot of people don't even think happen in the real world. How do we go and get people who are creatively curious, right? Like, people who are like, oh man, I don't even know what motion design is, but you show them and you explain them that this is not as demanding of an industry as like TV animation or working in video games. Like, there are spots here with people waiting for you, not just waiting for you, like actively looking for you. Like, I think it's almost like there's a higher level of advocacy that has to get like happen to even like get the process started. Then all those barriers have to get knocked down and there need to be leaders. There need to be examples of people, like you said, at the top. Because it's so disheartening to me to hear what you're saying about feeling like you can't ever make a mistake, because that really, whether it's skateboarding or motion design or whatever, like anything creative, like that's literally the definition of how you get better. So you're already being like you're working your ass off to be perfect, while everyone else is just making mistakes, and that's fine, and that's how you learn and you get better and you grow. But you're literally sitting there afraid to make the first mistake, not just for yourself, but for like everyone else behind you coming up. Like, that's insane. That amount of pressure just day to day, that's something beyond like everybody who just says, oh man, I have imposter syndrome, I don't know if I can do it. Like, that's a whole other world.
No, 100%. I have kind of acknowledged that this is like a thing in my industry. And so like I have been working for the past 2 months, I think coming on 3 months, on my nonprofit called Jumpstart Designers. And we're going to be launching next week, but we are working to get Adobe Creative Cloud and computers to lower income kids. Exactly what you're saying. Like it starts before the opportunity. Like the amount of Black and brown kids who don't have the accessibility to get into digital art, because digital art is expensive. Like it is not something like back in the day. I remember I was in high school and my friend like pirated Adobe After Effects like for me on like the school computer. And my mom, like I was like, Mom, I'm really into After Effects. Like I want a computer. And she like we went to go to Best Buy and she went to go buy me a laptop, like a $300 little laptop, and her credit card declined. And she like, we couldn't get it. Like we walked out of the store and I felt so defeated. And like my mom, like trying her best, was just like, I need to figure this out. And so like a few months later, she ended up saving her coins and she ended up getting me that little shitty $300 computer. And it's just insane because that same computer that I have, I'm like in like the school newspaper for like most likely to win an artistic award. And I had that little laptop with me in that photo. And it's just so crazy to think that like I would not be here if I had not started at that age, or at least like the amount of experience that I have, the amount of knowledge that I have, like really came from me having that access to that computer, me being able to work in After Effects and watch Video Copilot and like study everything and work in the actual programs. Like if I had not done that then, like I would not be here now. And it just makes me think like how many other kids could be in this position? Like, where they don't have the accessibility and they don't have the access to a computer. And like they have these dreams and these goals, but like they could never see themselves in those positions. And so, Adobe reached back out and they are like, we'll get you those subscriptions. So I'm like so stoked. And like, it's going to be like next week that we're like doing the launch. So we're just kind of like waiting and like, the pressure is on.
It's exciting. I mean, that's a mission that needs to happen for so many different reasons. Cause it is, it's like hard, one of the hardest parts is just letting people know that there's a door that can open for them. But then as soon as they know that door, if they don't have an example like you to see like, oh, this is what's possible. Like, this is why the work is worth it. But then also like everybody likes to talk about how it's so accessible to get into motion design. But I feel like it just speaks to like how elevated most of us are in terms of like not even understanding like, no, like, oh, however, I don't even remember how much Creative Cloud is at this point, but like a computer that you can actually do the work, an internet connection, and the software, like that adds up to so much when you're just trying to figure out if it's something, when you just want to play.
Yeah. Right?
Like you just want to be able to play and see somebody else doing it. Like that's a huge barrier that like needs to come down. I'm stoked to hear that like you reached out to Adobe. And I really think too that there's a place where I look at all these studios that are constantly like upgrading their equipment or switching to stuff in the cloud. And they're just like offloading like boatloads of old machines, that there's almost a call to action somewhere where like, you know what, if you say you want to see people of different educations, people of different experiences, people of different colors, different genders, like put your money where your mouth is. Like, let's get machines in people's hands, right? Like, let's get the machines. That's the only way it's going to happen.
Yes. No, I'd love that.
I will say like, I really, really want to talk about like your styles and the different kind of jobs you work on, because I really think one of my big issues that I always talk about is that motion design, for some reason, I think especially in the last 5 or 6 years, has really kind of turned into an echo chamber. Like all the stuff really looks and feels and sounds and talks the same. And whenever I run into somebody whose like work doesn't feel that way, I want to know everything about like, what are your inspirations? What are your interests? How can you do something like, if you go to your Instagram, like your Instagram 7K animation and then your Weekend Heartless, like the visual, those look like they're from completely different artists. Like how did you like get there? And then how do you pursue all these like wildly different styles?
It's so interesting because I have always beat myself up for so long for not having a specific style. And I've always just been like, well, like I can't really replicate the same thing for like a different song because that's not how I feel for that song. And I think it's just, I've always been so like passionate, like emotionally attached to music. And so whenever I listen to a song, I think about it like completely differently. Like I have like a different setup in my mind and like how I want it to feel. And so it wasn't until like a year ago, I was talking to like an ad agency and they wanted to like bring me on and they were like, yeah, so like, how would you describe your style? And I was like, I'm not sure. Like, I really don't know. Like, it's all just like how I feel at the time. And so my inspirations are literally everything, every single artist, every single cinematographer. Like when I like someone's art, I just like ingest it and I'm just like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like just little aspects of it. And I try to break it down on a technical level. Like, how did they do this? Oh, they added like a radial blur and oh, they added the noise here. And that makes so much sense. Like I want to do that for like a different project. And so it was definitely like this whole thing of like, you know, imposter syndrome, because I have so many like forms of inspiration. And that's why I feel like I don't have a particular style. And it's just because like I am intrigued by like everything. And the Heartless piece by The Weeknd, I like totally was like, oh, I want to do like this realistic thing. And then like 2 weeks later, I'm like doing like something completely different and it's all cartoon. And like, I really don't know. I think I just kind of fucked up mine, to be honest. It's something, there's some weird wiring going on in there because I definitely am not dedicated to like a specific style. But when I hear it, I like see it. It's pretty weird.
Yeah, I think it speaks to one of the issues I always have is that because a lot of the motion design industry is a service industry, like we're making stuff to sell stuff to other people. That's always the first question. It's like, oh, what's your style? Because I need your style to fit into this thing that I need to fit into this bigger campaign for someone else. But yeah. I love what you're talking about because really in my mind, when you're talking about that, like saying that you have a fucked up mind or that you love everything, like that to me is when I hear like people who are like concept artists for film or viz dev artists for animation, they're not hired for a style. They're hired for their curiosity. They're hired for their imagination. They're hired for the stuff that just keeps them up at night. And that is what inspires everyone else, right? Like it's not, oh, I got to fit into this box. It's like, oh, you need to help me figure out what the box is, which I think is probably one of the reasons why I resonated so much with your work. Another thing that really resonated with me, because I really think one thing that we're all really bad at in motion design as an industry, I'm trying to think of the right word to use. I hate this word, but it's kind of like branding or like just showing that you're confident in yourself. And one thing that I love across everything that I search for you, whether it's your website, your Twitter, your Instagram, you lead off with this thing that I think is great. And I wish more people would do this. Like, your name is here. And everywhere I look for you, it let me know right away. You're a 2-time Emmy Award winning motion graphics artist. Like I wanted to like stand up and applaud you for like having the, I don't know what the right word is, if it's confidence or swagger or whatever it might be. But when you put the things on there like that, like did that like freak you out? Was that something where you're like, oh man, I don't know if I'm being a little too like out there with this, or were you like, I need more of this. I want to have more things.
Yeah. I've always had this thing of like, I want to love myself like Kanye without being Kanye. Like, you know, I want to be like this super nice person that's like I'm confident in my work and like, but not to the point that like people are going to think that like I'm super egotistical or that like I'm an asshole. Like I think that there is a way to be confident in yourself and like not be like this pretentious like asshole. Like that's like one thing that like I've always tried to like project in my like presence online is just like, I want you to know that you don't have to be mean in order to be successful. And so, that's something that whenever they see my work and then they see that and they're like, what? Like, this is crazy. Like, this is an Academy Award. Why is this like little curly headed brown girl? Like, what's going on with this? You know? And it's definitely something that it's just something to say. But I think when I think of the things that I'm most proud of, like the projects that I'm most proud of, like, it's definitely not my Emmys, you know, like the Emmys right. they're great awards. And I think, so like last year, Ben Merritt, he is a YouTuber, he makes tutorials on YouTube on After Effects and stuff. And he's just such a great guy. But when I was deciding to leave my job at CBS to pursue motion graphics full time, I was like, hey, like I just messaged him and I was like, hey, how are you doing it? And he was like, you know what? You should get this book called The Freelance Manifesto. It's by School of Motion. And it changed my life. And so I read the book and I was just so happy to like check back in with him and be like, look, like I quit my job and I'm doing good and like I'm super proud. And he's like, that's so awesome. And he does like this thing every year where it's like little awards that he gives. So like best animation, best music video. And I'm watching these and I'm just thinking and like, wow, like all of these artists on like getting these awards are just so phenomenal. Like they're just so amazing. And like, I'm definitely not near that level of excellence. And I was just thinking in my head, like it would be like amazing to just be a part of this. And as I'm watching the video, it was like this breakdown video, Imani LaRussa. And I was like, I literally started crying. Like I didn't even cry for the Emmys. It just felt like this moment of like being so proud of the fact that I could potentially be in the same room with all of these talented artists. Like it just never occurred to me. And so it's just so interesting because I definitely use like the 2-time Emmy Award winning as like a reel in, but like the things that I feel like I'm most proud of are just like little things like that, where it's like, I've had the ability to be in the same room with all these amazing, talented artists. So it's pretty interesting.
I mean, I think it's great. It shows that you can be confident enough to sell what you offer, right? You can be confident enough to celebrate your successes. There's nothing wrong with that. But understanding that like humility or humbleness is also part of excellence. Like I love the fact, I'm going to apologize right now to anyone listening to this because you brought up Kanye West and I feel like you could talk about him for hours just as an artist and as a person who is a collaborator and someone who rides that kind of seesaw of confidence on one side and humility on the other at different points in his career. Those are completely different positions. But I think for me, the alluring thing about that for someone listening, like if you project confidence, that means that someone can trust you, right? Like if you have enough confidence to speak well about yourself, like there's something there that you want to be a part of. There's heat that you're generating that someone wants to attach their product or their explainer video or their music video, whatever. But the humility leaves enough room in the like relationship for someone else to still contribute, to be a partner. And I feel like lets them be a collaborator. And I feel like that you're using both of those, I think, in a really great way because you do give back, right? Like you show, I think on your Instagram, I saw recently, it was awesome. I watched through the whole thing of like how a piece of yours started. And then like you showed the reference photo and then you took people through the process of like actually working on that. And I think that takes a certain amount of, ability for our willingness to let people see, you know, like where you start, like that's humility, right? There's a humbleness to that. That's not showing off. It's saying like, oh, look, I start from this, but I can get to here. I think that's awesome. And I feel like, you know, like you mentioned Ben Marriott, he does a really great job of that. One thing that I think you do as well, really, I think that's great. It's like, you don't just show your work and just tout it. I think that whole idea of being able to use all of these outlets that are available to us, social media, Instagram, YouTube, making tutorials, doing things like this, like I think that can overwhelm a lot of people. And I think particularly, and I only know this because I've interviewed a lot of people and requested a lot of people for podcasts. I think women in general have a harder time in our industry, like being confident, like touting that for a lot of different reasons. But can you just talk a little bit about like how you approach all those other aspects of being in motion design besides just making the work, you know, like doing interviews, doing, you know, stuff for Instagram, being able to promote yourself? Like what is that like in your day-to-day life? Like how do you approach all of that?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It definitely goes back to the whole like branding thing and how I want to be perceived online. And I think like being that like I have chosen, but also not chosen to like be like a voice for like women of color animators, artists, creators. It's definitely this thing of like, I don't ever want to come off as like unapproachable. And I don't know if that's just like with being a female as well, because there's always this thing of like, oh, are you a bitch or are you a boss? And like usually dudes are like, yeah, he's so bossy. And then like when it's a girl, it's like, oh, she's so bitchy. And like, there's definitely like that difference. And so there's moments that I've definitely noticed in my career where I will like self-deprecate myself. Like I'll be like, oh, I'm so stupid. Like I'm so this. And like, I'm realizing I'm in a room full of men that think so highly of themselves and like would never say that. Like they would never say that they were stupid. They would never do that.
I was like, can I ask you a question about that? Cause I've always, yeah. I think people need to hear you say this because do you feel like you were doing that purposefully, like out loud? And you feel like there's a pressure to do that to like make it easier for the people in the room to work with you? Or is that just like an instinctual thing that happened?
I think outside of my like career, I tend to do that. And I think it's just like being, I don't know, like it definitely feels like there's like pressure on me to like be a cool person, because if I'm not, then no one's going to want to work with me. And it was kind of like the same thing with, I ended up calling out this rapper, Rich the Kid, who didn't want to pay me. And I got a message from like a lawyer, and she was like, hey, maybe don't do this because you may come off as like not easy to work with. And it just like hit me that like, why is it that like me using my voice, me like standing up for myself and me knowing my worth and my value is like going to be perceived as like hard to work with? Like judge me on my art, like judge me on like my work ethic, like don't judge me because like of my voice. And so like when I'm talking to people, I definitely notice that I do that, but I think it's a combination of just like trying to be perceived in a like certain way so that people don't think that I'm this like bitch, you know, like maybe like I saw a TikTok of like, I'm going to add like 10 more exclamation marks so that they know that like I'm nice. And it's right, just so real, because it's like, I do that all the time. And it's now just become a part of like who I am. But it doesn't mean that like, you are any less of a person. I think it's definitely like a people pleaser type trait, right. But like, I don't know. I've just always been like, if I could just kill them with kindness, if I could just do this and like, they want to feel better from it, then that's fine. I know that I work as hard as I possibly can. And if they want to judge me based on this small conversation that I'm having or like me confronting them about an issue, then like, I don't want to be around them. Then like, I don't want to like work with them. You know, it's just kind of this thing of like, I know my worth and definitely sticking to it.
Well, I mean, I appreciate you sharing that, because I think that that's something more people need to hear in the industry that probably never have considered that, right? Like you said, like in the room, if you're collaborating or you're brainstorming or you're pitching ideas, there's a lot of people in the room that don't even think twice. Like they have no filter. They don't think about, well, if I interrupt this person, what's the consideration? Like what's going to be thought of me? It's just, well, I'm interrupting this person because I have the right idea. I have the best idea and it needs to be said now. But I don't think people understand until they hear someone like you saying like, oh, you know what? If I have four processors in my brain going all the time, three of them are dedicated to just making sure I don't upset people and I teach people how it's okay to work with me. And only one is actually being able to like, 25% of my time is able to be focused on just coming up with a cool idea or working. There's all these other considerations that happen in your day-to-day process.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's I feel like that's like a good thing to like be able to manage, but like also, I don't know, I feel like that's a strong thing to like be conscious of everyone like in the room, but like knowing that like your intention is there, like your intention is good. Your mm-hmm. intention is not to hurt anybody. And as long as that's the case, like I think you'll be good, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a big part of it is just trying to find a way to shift the demographics, shift those rooms so that it's not 90% me and 10% everyone else, that it's, because I don't know if you had this experience in school or not, but I know I certainly did, was that when I was going to AI in Chicago, which mm-hmm. also doesn't exist now, one of my happiest days in my life was paying off my student loan before my school actually closed. That was cool.
Oh my gosh.
it was like, I only beat it by like 2 weeks, but I still did it. so that was great. But I only now in hindsight, you know, like I'm had conversations with lots of people, like, why is there this like super fast burnout for so many women who come out of animation and film schools when they, you know, first encounter the industry? Because sometimes maybe, you know, school's great, it's supportive, maybe, but you get out and the world is very different and you haven't been prepared for the challenges. But I also wonder too, like for men who go through this whole process, they have not seen women in positions of power or positions of being shown as an expert. Like, I don't know about you, but I didn't really have many female instructors going through my entire school. And until I made it to Imaginary Forces, which was like 12 years into my career, I never saw a female creative director run a room, like you said, like a boss, like someone who, this is what we're going to do. This is why you want this solution. And if you don't like this solution, that's fine. The next company down the line is going to love this idea. So it's up to you. Like, it was so enlightening to see that. But I also think about like how many men in our industry just have never encountered that. Not that that like justifies the behavior, but it's like a big perspective shift to be able to say like, oh no, look at what you're doing. Look at what, like, you're a two-time Emmy award-winning director and you're not afraid to say it. Like, that's a huge shift from what most people are used to encountering.
Like, I just hearing that, I just like, it's just so real. Like, just knowing that there's a lot of people that just haven't experienced like just people of color, women, like in the mm-hmm. industry. And like, I think now it's becoming more apparent, just being with last year happening, like with COVID and George Floyd. Like, I just hope every single year it's just becoming more and more like apparent of like these systematic issues that are happening. And like, it's up to like us, it's up to all of us to just like be a part of the movement and just like go out of your way to support somebody. Like,
yeah,
they're out there, you know?
Even like for anyone listening to this, that's like, oh, you know, I hear this all the time. And you know, those are societal issues or those are moral issues. Like, what about the industry? Like, the best work should win. I would argue all the time that as in motion design, we're making stuff most of the time for other people, right? Like, as the rooms start looking more and more like one demographic, one group of people, but the people we're trying to help sell to are changing dramatically as more and more people have more purchasing power. Why it should, for the work to actually resonate, for studios to be able to go out and win work, you have to become more diverse. You have to have more experiences. You have to know other ways of talking to people. Like, your sum total of your references just can't be UFC, Voltron, and Star Wars. Like, those are cool. Those are great. But there are people out there dying, hungry, and will notice something that speaks differently. And that like, even just on like the granular, like money-making level, if you want to be selfish and you want to have a company that's doing well, it's in your best interest to also go this direction.
Like, when I think about characters being drawn, mm-hmm. a lot of times, like, I've hired like animators, like white male animators, and I'll ask them to draw like a black female character. And like, they'll throw like a fro on a white character and make their skin like dark. And it's like, it's just the lack of representation that they've seen. It's not there. And so like, how to like accurately represent these characters, like, it's in your best interest to just have people who have that experience of like knowing what the facial features of certain like ethnicities are, and like being able to create things that are like out of the box. Like, who wants the same character every single time? You know, there's mm-hmm. so many different people that look so many different ways. And it's like, bringing the people who are actually involved in those cultures, like it just opens a door of like new possibilities.
Yeah. And I can't say how much I agree with that. Like it's so true. I just saw recently, it's an older article, but somebody had this article that said, you can't just draw purple people and call it diversity because it goes the opposite direction, right? It goes the opposite direction. It's almost like you're saying maybe 10 years ago you could do that. And you see it all the time, right? You see it in all the, like the large, like social media brands that are investing in character design and character animation. Yeah. So they feel warmer instead of saying like, okay, well let's actually invest and see like, what does a caricature of this demographic or this personality or this age group, what does it look like? They're just, yeah, you know what, just make everybody green and purple.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see, there is no color. Like that, that's almost an even in a world where everybody says authenticity and all those other buzzwords, like that's like the biggest joke in the world. Like how hard is it? Like there's two things you can do. You can either go out and actually do what most artists outside of motion design do. You draw from life, you research, you reference, yeah. You talk to people, or you know what, just hire people of the same kind of like experience and background that you want to speak yeah. to. It's kind of, it seems simpler than it like seems to be for companies, but
yeah,
I don't know. Hopefully things are changing. We talked Kanye West. Is it okay if we talk a little bit more about this one project, Ego Death, that you did?
Oh, yes.
Like, obviously we've talked a lot about the different types of work you do, but this piece just alone, like I've seen a lot of lyric videos, which I don't know if this technically qualifies as a lyric video just because there's so much work in it, but technically the lyrics are there. How did you find this project, or did someone find you? Because I can't imagine the amount of work that went into this piece.
Yeah, that project is so crazy how it happens. And it kind of goes back to like when people always ask me, like, how do you get like jobs like this? Like, this mm-hmm. is crazy. The power of the internet is so underestimated. So basically, I knew this girl in Sacramento. She ended up moving to New York, and she got close with some producers out there. And one day producers posted on Twitter, like, hey, looking for an animator for this project for Breland. And she like tagged me in it. And I was like, oh, I would love to be a part of it. And so I got to work. It was this song called Hot Sauce. And it was a lyric video. And I had like this idea of like making it super crazy, all these different like hot sauce characters. Like at one point it was like a hot sauce bottle with like a big butt, and it's just ridiculous, you know? Cause in the world of animation, you could do anything. And so I'm like halfway through that project and I'm sending them like, this is what we have so far. Let me know if this is the right direction. And, the producer like called me and she was like, this is so amazing that I've showed Sal. So the record label that artist was under is called Sal & Co. That same record label has Ty Dolla $ign. Mm-hmm. And they were like, she was like, we showed Sal and he absolutely loves it. And he wants to bring you on for this Kanye project. And I was like, what? this is crazy, but okay. Yes. And she was like, well, we're working on it now. We have this idea, but we kind of just want to see your treatments for it. And so I was like, okay, like I'll start working on it right now. And so yeah, the project, it got delayed to where like the concept wasn't getting approved. And so it wasn't until 2 weeks before the deadline that they had approved it. Jeez. And so I was like, okay, so this 2 month project is now 2 weeks. But I mean, I've done shorter, like the Panini project that I worked on was 4 days. And that was absolutely insane. But yeah, so the project, it got basically like cut to like 2 weeks. And like I'm working on the project, and it ended up being to where I think there was just like a miscommunication to where they didn't know that the video was going to be in black and white with like a touch of color. Mm-hmm. But like 2 days before the project was due, they were like, so like, where's the color at? And I was like, in the treatment, it says it's like black and white. And they were like, oh no, we need it in color. And I was like, But the project's due.
Weeks.
Yeah, I know. And I'm like, we have to do color in 2 days. And so a project that ended up starting, I think, with like 8 people ended up being like a 17 like person project. Yeah. And I'm just like trying to like scramble, just hitting so many animators up on Instagram. Like, do you want to work on a Kanye project? And just like, it was just so insane. Yeah. Tomorrow we need it yesterday. And like, it was such a crazy project. And it really taught me to make sure that like when I'm working with a client, to overly communicate. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care if I feel stupid for asking questions or overly communicating. I need you to know what my thought process is, because it's so much better to do that than to not have enough information and like do something else. Like, it just was such a crazy project and such a tight deadline that like all of my energy and focus was just like, we need to make sure that this hits this deadline. Like, I've never not met a deadline before. Mm-hmm. And so, it was a really fun project in the end, like being able to look at everything and be like, wow, this was made in 2 weeks. Like, this is insane.
I mean, it's mind boggling. Like, if you're listening to this, you have to like just hit pause and watch it, because that just the amount of, I mean, there's a ton of characters for one, but the amount of just pencil mileage and like unique frames, the smear frames, the transitions, like that stuff. I would have guessed you actually had double the amount of animators, and not even knowing the amount of time, just because there's so much stuff. This is one of the like most visually dense like videos I've seen for animation. I can't believe that you did it that quickly.
Yeah, I was like, imagine if we had like 4 months, what would look like. Like, it's just, it's crazy, but it's honestly, it's the music industry. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever had a project in like working in the music industry where I was like, wait, the deadline is like where we could actually like breathe and like the budget is good. And like, it's just, that's just how it is. Like, it's so quick and they constantly need new content. And so like, that's one thing that I wish I would have known when I started, that like this stuff is like, they need it by tomorrow, or like they need it in 2 days. And so I actually met with Mike Diva, who is an amazing artist, creator, visual effects artist. And he did the Panini, the Lil Nas X Panini video. He did like the actual video portion of it. And I did a remix version that was all animation.
Wow.
And we like got to like grab some lunch and we like talked about like the project and stuff. And he's just like, so like, how was the project? Like, what did you do? Like, how many days did it take you? And I was like, yeah, so it took like 3 days. Like, we only had 3 days to make it. And he was like, that is insane. And I was like, what? And he's like, that's not normal. And I was like, it's not.
It's probably the opposite. It's normally inverted. The live action gets 3 days, a couple days of post animation gets the time like that.
Yeah. It was pretty crazy just to hear from another, like, he's so successful and he's so amazing and just such a nice dude. But like hearing his perspective of like, you shouldn't be getting treated like this. And like, you should be asking for more money then. And I was like, after I left that, I was like, I'm raising my pay rate.
Yeah. Raising your rate and getting really specific on like contracts and deal memos for like time and requirements. Because the thing that I do like about this, the ego death video, is that with that limited amount of time and having to like add on animators, there is a really cool energy to it. Like, it feels, it's a cool energy that actually I feel like matches the song and the lyrics because of it. And whether it like you backdoored into it or it was meant to be that way, the final product doesn't look like it was done in 2 weeks, but it still matches like the vibe of the song.
Yeah. I got to meet with FKA Twigs like over the phone. Oh my gosh.
Awesome.
She's an angel. Like, I'm convinced that she is a real life angel. Like, she's just super nice. She had like some minor notes on the project, and it was like the perfect time to have notes. Like, it wasn't like a day before the deadline, you know. Like, she was very considerate of us artists, and like she was just so nice and explained why she wanted like these revisions and stuff. And That was like one thing that like I grasped from that project was like, I love her. She's amazing.
I feel like it's a rare opportunity when like two artists get to collaborate, like the dialogue, like so many times we have so many middlemen between us and the people we're making things for. And yeah. Even then it's not like for another artist. It's that rare time where you're actually like, oh, like the few times I've gotten to work and make something for an artist, them just even asking like, can I have permission to ask for this change? Like only another artist would talk that way to another artist. They would, no one else would ever do that.
Exactly. Yeah. They had the management had emailed me and they're like, hey, so we could either give you the revisions over email or we could give your number to FKA Twigs. And I was like, yes, here is my number. like, don't hesitate. And it's pretty call interesting. Anytime. Yeah. Call anytime. My phone is available for you. But like this weekend when I did the Meg Thee Stallion visual, she like came in and was such a sweetheart. Like, I don't know. I feel like every female musician that I've met in the industry, they're just super nice. Mm-hmm. I haven't met a mean one yet, but it was just so like refreshing to just have her input and like just really care about the project and like want to like meet with the artist and just kind of explain what she wanted and stuff. So that was really cool.
That's great. Well, I think we learned so much about like your style, your history, kind of like where you came from, what you're pushing forward and the projects you have going forward. I'd love, because we have a lot of people in the audience that are designers or they're illustrators that they kind of want to do more of the work that you're doing, right? Whether it's self-motivated or it's, you know, music for different, I'd say video for different kinds of clients, like working for an artist. For somebody who's kind of maybe has a little bit of background in this, you know, they're 2-3 years into it, they've worked for a couple people, maybe they're freelancing, maybe they're a staff. What kind of advice would you give them to start moving more in the kind of direction of the work you're doing? Because I feel like you have this really, you said you don't have a style, but I really do think, I picked that ego death one to talk about because I think it captures a lot of the things that I see through your work, like the style of character design mixed with this kind of almost like trippy kind of visual style mixed on top of it. I love those two things. You never see those two things mixed together. I think they're really great. But for someone who's like, oh man, I love that, but I feel like I'm way behind from where you're at. What kind of advice would you give to someone who's like, how do I push myself into that direction? Like maybe not get there all at once, but like just break free from some of the kind of like day-to-day grind of client work.
Yeah. So when I was working at CBS, I was working there 40 hours a week. And then I would get home and I would work on like fan art pieces. So I have always been obsessed with Tyler, the Creator. And so I would just, he came out with a new song and I would make a little graphic for it. And like specifically the music industry, like there's so many things that kind of come with like building that success from this very specific type of content and just like making sure that like you're on it. Like when an artist mm-hmm. comes out with new music, like if you know that like, oh my gosh, I love Meg Thee Stallion. She's so amazing. Like I just want to work with her one day. Then like mm-hmm. every time she comes out with a song, like be on the trends, like just try to do something. And you don't have to make like this like 5-week long project for her music. You don't have to make content that is like so long, like just getting in that daily practice. Like I always say like 1 hour a day, whether you're researching new artists, whether you're researching new songs or getting new inspiration or watching tutorials, like that is just so important to make sure that you are dedicating like an hour. And mm-hmm. it's really not a lot when you think about how much time you just spend on your phone in general. Like if you like get into the habit of just making your social media time, like looking up artists that you really like and like their type of art style and breaking it down like on a technical level, like it just makes you better. It makes you understand that like, oh, on my next project, I'm going to do this. It gives you inspiration. It gives you right. like that drive. And it's not easy. Like, it's not this thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to tag my favorite artist and they're going to see my work and I'm going to like get famous. Like, it is something that takes a lot of time. Like, I can't tell you how many fan art pieces I made before I actually got one like from the actual artist. And so I think just patience and knowing that like your goal is to just be better, be a better artist. Like, as long as that's always there and like you're always striving to like be a part of this, then like you're just going to get better. Like, whether it's like motion graphics or like sewing, you know, if you're spending like an hour a day like watching YouTube videos of like different sewing techniques or like different like patterns and stuff, you know, you just will get better. And like, I know this is like super like side, but like making sure that you take care of yourself meanwhile, like work is just a part of you and not all of you. Like, you need to make sure that you are drinking enough water and you are healthy and you are in the right state of mind, because that's going to completely show in your work. So like, don't feel sad if you like take a self-care day, you know, it's good to do that every now and then. Like, you don't have to like work 70-hour weeks in order to just be this like success. That's not what success is. It's like that hard work that you put into it and that passion. And so I wish someone told me that early on. I'm barely learning that now, but it is something that is so important.
It's a constant. So you got to constantly remind yourself of it all the time too. Yeah. I mean, the industry has kind of, at times, I think all creative ones do, but motion design has this a lot, kind of like a like grind, hustle, death march, kind of like jocular.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not killing yourself, you're not getting better kind of mentality. Yeah. But I think a lot of times that's because, like, again, like how we define ourselves, like how fast can you make something for someone else versus being like, what do you like? Like, what are you obsessed about? Like, what gets you excited in the morning to like get up and sit at a computer for 8 hours a day or however long it is? Like, being able to take the time away to figure that stuff out, like, that actually pays off in ways that you don't really understand when you're still thinking like, oh, I only worked 12 hours today. Can I do two more? You know, like that mentality just doesn't, it has diminishing returns, I guess.
100%. And that's something that I have like learned later on. I'm like, I thought it was a total flex to work like 75-hour weeks. And I'm like, yes, like I'm doing it. And then like I have a panic attack and I'm like, wait, what's going on? Why did no one tell me that this was going to happen? So like, it's definitely something that I have learned and something that I super like undervalued, especially like being in the music industry specifically. It is very like fast paced, and like having that work life balance is like super important. But I would just say like spending that time to just, you know, do the next big thing and staying up with the trends and using hashtags, adding them like at them. And yeah, it's all there. It's all important.
That's awesome. I hope after that 2 week kind of crush on that Kanye West project, you got to take a self-care week, not a self-care day.
I honestly think I took like 2 days and I was like, on to the next project. I'm like crawling like my way out. But eventually I think I took like a week or two off and I was like, I need to do this more often.
Well, thank you for all the advice. Thank you for the tips. There's so much good work here to kind of look at. I could talk to you for another hour about like how you did certain things and like who are the animators you hired. And I think if anything, this is a good tip. And you might get a bunch of emails after this, but you might want to be on Imani's like roster, because it sounds like she's busy and it sounds like she's working on like really cool projects. So with that, I just want to say thank you very much. I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for having me. This is like such goals for mine. I literally have a School of Motion like bookmark on my web browser. Like, I'm always on the site. So this is huge. This is so cool.
Motioneers, I don't know how you feel, but I am inspired after that talk with Imani. What I really love about it is, yes, Imani is an amazing artist with great clients, but also she's not forgetting to reach back and lift others up as she works through her career. And that's something we love to do at School of Motion. This podcast is all about bringing you new artists, helping you elevate yourself, and trying to find new inspiration no matter where you may be in your career. So until next time, peace.